divisions will bog down in a First World War-style confrontation with the U.S. disadvantage of those stretched communications. The third scenario is that the Medina division will outflank the 3rd ID, take it in the rear, and overwhelm it. Then the exultant Arab street will erupt in the humiliation of the great Satan. And so it will all get much, much nastier. The actual fighting component of the invading U.S.-British force is small because, as anonymous Pentagon officers are now bitterly complaining, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld's preference for special forces prevailed over General Tommy Frank's recommendation of a far larger force. Also because huge peace demonstrations in Turkey lopped off the northern half of the invading pincers. If urban fighting increases, U.S. strategy will veer toward old-fashioned saturation bombing. The temptation to flatten significant portions of Baghdad by B-52 raids is growing sharply as the land force gets seriously stymied. As regards the small U.S.-UK force trying to overwhelm Baghdad, imagine a force far less than one of the recent peace demonstrations landing in Corpus Christi, Texas, then advancing through Phoenix through sandstorms, bypassing all major conurbations and occasionally announcing it has successfully seized the significant portions of the desert of the southwest and nervously threatening to declare war on Mexico if it intervenes. On this latter point, note that the Iranian-backed Islamic Council has told its adherents in southern Iraq not to rise, also that the Kurds are conspicuously sitting on their hands. The agitprop war. The propaganda war is not going according to Western plans either. There are plenty of excellent and courageous correspondents and observers in Baghdad, not least Paul Wood of the BBC. Robert Fisk's account, Bitter Truths of Basra, on this site attests to the importance of the Al Jazeera coverage in Basra. We have the truly extraordinary situation that the Iraqi spokesman in Baghdad is being given more credibility than the far wider, wilder military flacks who have seriously damaged their credibility with numerous baseless claims about the capture of Iraqi towns and preposterous British allegations that it is necessary to destroy Basra in order to bring it vital humanitarian supplies. It should also be said that many reporters with major organizations are doing a useful and professional job. We've been reading excellent reports from UPI, Reuters, and even AP, as well as Knight Ridder and other papers. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld continues to perform valiantly as a vital Iraqi asset, tremulously discovering the Geneva Convention on Treatment of Prisoners or suddenly threatening war against Syria and Iran. Another Rumsfeld propaganda coup, the retired general named as civilian governor of occupied Iraq has visited Israel on a trip paid for by a right-wing group that strongly backs an American military presence in the Middle East. Lieutenant General Jay Garner, the co-coordinator for civilian administration in Iraq, put his name in October 2000 to a statement blaming Palestinians for the outbreak of the Israeli-Palestinian violence and saying that a strong Israel was an important security asset to the United States. This piece of information circulated the Middle East with as much rapidity as the resignation of Richard Perle from his chairmanship of the Defense Board and the supposed trip of Vice President Cheney's daughter to become a human shield. Chickens in the darkening sky. So the sky is dark, with chickens coming home to roost, and bedtime reading is Thucydides' account of the disastrous Athenian siege of Syracuse. Start with the amazed discovery of the White House, the Defense Department, and the permanently embedded U.S. press corps that nations don't care to be invaded, even if they have been misgoverned by a tyrant for decades. How many Russians died defending the Soviet Union from the German invasion after enduring famine and Stalin's terror? This isn't 1991 when Iraqis asked themselves, why die for Kuwait? Basra, military officials, quote-unquote, ran a European press report, later admitted that they had vastly underestimated the strength of Iraqi resistance and the loyalty of Basra's population to Saddam. The report quoted a British officer as saying there are significant elements in Basra who are hugely loyal to the regime. Kurdish-held northern Iraq, even in Kurdistan, reported the London Independent in the person of my brother, Patrick Cockburn, where the U.S. is popular and where President Saddam committed some of his worst atrocities, there are flickers of Iraqi patriotism. A Kurdish official who has devoted years to opposing the government in Baghdad admitted, Iraqis won't like to see American soldiers ripping down posters of Saddam Hussein, though they might like to do it themselves. They didn't enjoy watching the stars and stripes being raised near Qasr. Rumsfeld visits Geneva. But perhaps the most grotesque chicken now roosting in the coop came in the form of Rumsfeld's sudden discovery of the Geneva Conventions regarding prisoners of war. When 5 captured U.S. soldiers were paraded in front of the Iraqi television cameras, Rumsfeld immediately complained that it is against the Geneva Convention to show photographs of prisoners of war in a manner that is humiliating for them. True, but the United States does not hold the high moral ground in leveling this charge. In January 2002, the United States released a photograph of Guantanamo detainees kneeling, shackled, and hooded. The Red Cross said that the United States may have violated the Geneva Conventions by releasing the photo, since no coercion may be inflicted on prisoners of war to secure from them information of any kind whatsoever. Under conditions of sleep deprivation, bright light, and other techniques, at least 25 prisoners in Camp X-Ray at Guantanamo have tried to kill themselves, some more than once. The U.S. government claims that these men are not subject to the Geneva Conventions, as they are not prisoners of war, but, quote, unlawful combatants. But as George Monbiot of the London Guardian remarks, the same claim could be made with rather more justice by the Iraqis holding the U.S. soldiers who illegally invaded their country. But this redefinition is itself a breach of Article 4 of the Third Convention, under which people detained as suspected members of a militia like the Taliban or a volunteer corps like Al-Qaeda must be regarded as prisoners of war. On March 6th, U.S. military officials acknowledged that 2 prisoners captured in Afghanistan in December had died during interrogation at Bagram Air Base north of Kabul. A spokesman for the air base confirmed that the official cause of death of the 2 men was homicide. The men's death certificates showed that one died from, quote, blunt force injuries to lower extremities complicating coronary artery disease. Another prisoner suffered from a blood clot in the lung that was exacerbated by a, quote, blunt force injury. On November 21, 2001, some 8,000 Taliban soldiers and Pashtun civilians surrendered at Kunduz to Northern Alliance Commander General Abdul Rashid Dostum. A major war crime with powerful evidence of U.S. participation ensued. Jamie Doran's 2002 documentary film, Massacre in Afghanistan, shows how 3,000 prisoners were loaded into container trucks with the doors sealed and the trucks left to stand in the sun for several days. An Afghan soldier said he was ordered by a U.S. commander to fire shots into the containers to provide air, although he knew he would certainly hit some of those inside. An Afghan taxi driver reports seeing a number of containers with blood streaming from the floors. According to one of the drivers, survivors of the transport ordeal were dumped in the desert near Mazar-e-Sharif. As 30 to 40 U.S. soldiers looked on, those prisoners still alive were shot and left in the desert to be eaten by dogs. Doran interviewed a Northern Alliance soldier guarding the prison. I was a witness when an American soldier broke one prisoner's neck. The Americans did whatever they wanted. We had no power to stop them. After an investigation, the German newspaper Die Zeit concluded no one doubted that the Americans had taken part. Doran, an Irishman, says in his film that the Pentagon and State Department have tried by any means to block an investigation. Inflated price of hot air dooms festival. The amount of hot air being put out by official U.S. and U.K. spokespersons has led to an unexpected surge in the price of this vital commodity. It is feared that unscrupulous entrepreneurs are taking advantage of the recently deregulated market to corner hot air stocks and hold them off the market, thus causing the base price of hot air to rise. Democrats in Congress are calling on the Bush administration to open up the National Hot Air Reserve, now guarded by a mixed force of Wall Street Journal editorial writers carrying their trademark pop guns, plus a rabble of fedayeen in civilian clothes, press gang from the Standard, New Republic, and CNN. Evidence of the economic devastation threatened such by price rises continues to pour to the Counterpunch news desk. And actually, this is sort of a jokey break from the grim news. And you're listening to Alexander Cockburn's column in www.counterpunch.org. Which is, you can catch on your local computer if you have access to the Internet. A lot of good stories here, a lot of interesting stuff, and we'll be reading some more of it later in the show. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And let's go back to the street and hear some more interviews.
In downtown Santa Cruz, many of us have been supporting and participating in a 24-hour vigil.
Actually, we're going to hear now a Board of Supervisors speech me talking to the board last Tuesday. But then we'll go back to the street.
Wars, the war in Iraq, and the war against the poor. City police, embarrassed by the Riley Kennedy Council's wretched homeless policies, cracked down on the vigil when it was at Hooper and Pacific, drove it around town at times, at least at one time, under gunpoint, and are now harassing it at the town plot. The issue for the police and politicians is visible poverty, where the usual sweep them under the rug or drive them out of town tactics have been embarrassed by a joint community public 24-hour protest against the war, which has acquired some legitimacy. There, homeless people and their supporters have been providing the persistent round-the-clock core of visible resistance to the war locally, among other groups, of course, doing work. Please come down to Pacific and Water Streets at the town clock or join and support the vigil. In Supervisor Wormhout, Santa Cruz, it is still a crime for 85% of the homeless to sleep at night. In San Francisco, a grand jury went to the top and turned a corrupt police department upside down. That same corrupt department grows daily more brutal against peaceful protesters exercising their right of assembly to stop a rabid war machine in the hands of an extremist cabal, which is prepared to spend $75 billion of your dollars in the next month. Over 2,500 have been arrested in San Francisco. They need the community's support. For news, the mainstream media won't broadcast. Go to www.santacruz.indymedia.org. Oh, for a Santa Cruz grand jury with that courage and independence. In Santa Cruz County, in Watsonville, two families have been ripped apart by what appears to me to be corruption in the sheriff's department, the district attorney's office, and the courts. The Pinto boy is now in San Quentin prison after rotting in jail for more than a year, apparently to protect false sheriff's reports issued by Deputy Nielsen and Sheriff Sergeant Deverell. The whole process overseen by former DA Art Danner, now spruced up in judicial robes. Fernando Espino spoke to you last week about 17 months of harassment, intimidation, cover-up, and corruption, where he and his sister Anna are the targets of false charges, fabricated police reports, and an unspoken official policy of tolerating and covering for bad cops. He showed you his injuries. Supervisor Peary, to her credit, met with both families yesterday. She advised the Espinos to go get a good lawyer. To her credit, Peary promised to review evidence of institutional corruption and malfeasance in the sheriff's and DA's office. So, let's take her at her word. Call 420-2200. That's the Board of Supervisors number, but only...
It's actually 454-2200. 454-2200 for the Board of Supervisors. The problem is, as you'll hear in a moment, you can't call them except during business hours because they're too cheap to put in an answering machine.
Hours, since the board is apparently too cheap or too oblivious to install an answering machine so working people can leave messages. Pass on information about falsified police reports and criminal behavior by cops and prosecutors. The sheriff's office has no oversight body. The Board of Supervisors are the elected representatives who need to drain this swamp. Please spare the community of the usual cop-out that the sheriff is elected separately. The board has the power to address the problem. Grand jury can also be reached at 454-2099. Sheriff Mark Tracy can be reached at 454-2414. Poor people can't afford attorneys, and this county cannot afford a corrupt or unresponsive sheriff's department nor a district attorney's office that pressures the innocent to plea bargain in order to protect cozy DA police connections. We can't afford the war on drugs, the war on terror, and the war in Iraq, and we can't tolerate the war on the poor and the war on minorities like the Pintos and the Espinos. We need whistleblowers. Please contact the Espinos and the Pintos to let them know your experience with the sheriff's department. Leave a message at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, and I will forward it to them. Thank you. Thank you. What is the correct number?
454.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Good morning. My name is Ana Rosa Espino, and I'm here this morning. I live in Watsonville to thank you, Mrs. Peary, for the interview.
And actually, I'm going to take this opportunity in my usual arbitrary makeshift fashion to kind of switch the schedule around. You're now hearing Ana Espino, who I referred to earlier, talking to the supervisors about malicious prosecution of her and false police reports and so forth that I referred to in the speech before the Board of Supervisors last Tuesday. We're going to hear her speaking and a supporter or two, and then we're going to hear an interview a week before with Fernando Espino, her brother. And that interview is a relatively long one. I had it out in the hallway after Fernando spoke, which I unfortunately didn't get a recording of because he was quite eloquent. As I said, he showed his injuries to to the board. His arm was injured, his back was injured, and this was all 17 months ago, so apparently it was significant injuries. His story, however, is even more impressive, although it is kind of an unwieldy story, and it is one that sort of evolves. You have to be kind of patient. I'm hoping that I can have him and Anna on the air at some point soon, and we can actually talk to them. But until that point, we're going to hear, as a preliminary, we're going to hear some of the interviews with them now. Again, more from the Board of Supervisors on March 25th.
I'm still in the same hall. I have these numbers for people in the others, for the community. They can call and ask for legal documents to see if I'm lying. I was working with a lady that don't have no family, Mrs. Dorothy Shuri, and they removed me from my job. They abused her rights. In America, you have rights in your house to let the people who you want in the house or who don't you want in the house, even the authorities. You read the Constitution. The police department, the sheriff's department, never read that. They have their system, that abuse all their people. I'm not a criminal. My brother is not a criminal. They fabricate criminal record for my brother. He's not here today. He's in another office begging people, begging citizens like you that they pay taxes. For this, Mark Twain is not here. He's hiding. He don't want to show up and say, I'm sorry, we have good cops. Yes, I know, there's good officers. If the officer is still calling in the corner, he's an honest officer. There's more officers. I respect the law. And I want everybody in this audience to know that tomorrow will be you. Mrs. Dorothy Shuri is dead. She was harassed by David DeVille. I don't count because I'm Latino, but she was white. And I'm here to ask the community, because the Board of Supervisors cannot do anything. I ask the community, please, tomorrow can be your family. You're growing older, you have a mother, a grandmother. Don't do nothing for me. I know, and you know, in this county, Latino, we don't have any voice. We don't count. We just count to pay taxes, but not to be respected. We're not criminals. You might have a Latino friend or co-worker, and you see, they have a normal life like you. We came to this country from all over the place. We all are immigrants and have the right to survive. And you welcome to see information, legal information, not lies. Please forgive me. I'm not here to hurt anybody's feelings, but they are destroying my family, and they destroyed Mrs. Dorothy Shuri's life. Thank you. Have a good day.
Mrs. Spino is Latino, and my name is Tim Moore.
Thank you.
From Watsonville. Mrs. Spino is Latino, and Mrs. Shuri was white, and she was also worth $2 million. You might, just as a point of information, like to know that the Espinos were made given the power of attorney. To this day, they don't, as far as they know, they still have that power of attorney. It was drawn up by a lawyer. It was notarized. The authorities will not reveal to them whether or not they still possess that power of attorney. Now, Ms. Perry, I thank you again for meeting with us yesterday. You said that if the corruption in your mind rose to a certain threshold, that you would review it, you would look into it. I don't know if you were speaking on your own behalf or whether you were speaking on behalf of the supervisors, but nevertheless, it would appear at this point that if there was institutional corruption in the Justice Department, in the Sheriff's Office, in the DA's office, that the legislative and executive portions of local government their attention could be aroused, and they could be persuaded to look into these matters. I have to wonder at what point the threshold is reached, though. You have you have people who were accused wrongly of a crime by a Sergeant Devereaux, who had to turn around and write a new crime report accusing a woman, Miss Watson, Nancy Watson, of the crime, and recommending that she be prosecuted by the DA's office. At this point in time, we don't know what is going to happen in that regard. It certainly, it appears, has reached the threshold with a Sergeant Skillicorn with the Sheriff's Office, who expressed to me on a couple of occasions that he was disturbed by this, that he didn't understand why Miss Watson had not been brought before a court of law. And this is just the tip of the iceberg, as Mr. Norris and others have expressed. There is something going on here. It's not good. And I think it behooves the board to look into these matters rigorously. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wants to address the board on the oral communication?
And that was Tim Moore speaking for the Board of Supervisors, a friend of Anna and Fernando Espino, or I should say a concerned citizen upset at what he sees as a serious miscarriage of justice, where both Anna and Fernando are still facing charges 17 months later that actually stem from claims by Sergeant David Devereaux that these two were abusing an elder and as part of their care functions. I think they were care providers. All those charges were dropped. Police reports, as I understand it, changed, and the really guilty party was taking the money, never charged, as you heard, if at least in the minds of these folks, they think that a woman named Nancy Watson was guilty. And instead, a continuing campaign of harassment against Fernando and Anna Espino for raising cocks, meaning raising hens and roosters, and I guess it's animal abuse. It's a way of getting money to for cockfighting that goes on in Watsonville. It's all kind of arcane and complicated, as I said. The reality, however, seems to be, my concern anyway, is the concerted energy by combination of judicial power, attorney power, and prosecutorial power to go after a couple that essentially are threatening to expose corruption in the sheriff's office here. And I'm going to now play the interview with Fernando Espino, which, as I said, took place a week before when Fernando spoke before the Board of Supervisors. And bear with it. It's a little, it may seem a little confusing, but I think it's worth listening to. And as I said, at some point, I just contacted Anna Espino. She's not in the area right now, but when she gets back, I think she'll be happy to be on the air to clarify a lot of these concerns. She also faces a court date coming up where Judge Barracuda Barton is refusing to give her another continuance beyond this one to get an attorney. She had an attorney at one point, Sean Gallagher, who apparently had disputes with her. He wanted her to plead to charges, and she didn't want to plead because she feels she's innocent. She feels this is a way that this would compromise her civil lawsuit against the police department for false arrest and so forth. And now she's being pressured to have to go to court herself and defend herself without a lawyer or with a court-appointed lawyer that she is not in good relations with or has disputes with. So it's, you know, for many of us, it's sort of business as usual, same shit, different day. But it's hopefully some people in the Latino community in Watsonville can get behind her in this situation and behind the two Espinos, as they should also get behind the Pintos, whose son is now, as I said, rotting in San Quentin, in spite of a jury decision that he was not guilty of. The only thing he was guilty of might have been obstructing an officer, for which he was shot in the stomach by Officer Nielsen, and then held in jail for over a year. Again, it looks to many of us in order to conceal police misconduct, in this case, deputy misconduct. And, of course, because of the closeness between the sheriffs and the prosecutors, it then becomes prosecutorial misconduct. And when the judge is ratified, it becomes judicial misconduct. And the stench deepens and the corruption spreads. Anyway, here's an interview. Judge for yourself. Hopefully more of the facts will come out. If you want more information, just give a call to 423-HUFF. Or you can call, that's 423-4833. the off-air number if you want to reach me, or you can also contact the station and make your own commentary now while I'm on the air, 427-3772. That's free radio, 427-3772, and it's 96.3 you're listening to, so you can do that. You can also send an email to rnorse@hotmail.com, rnorse@hotmail.com. Okay, it's around 9:30, and it's March 18th, 2003. We're outside the Board of Supervisors' chambers. We're speaking with
Fernando Spino.
Mr. Spino, you just spoke before the Board of Supervisors. You actually showed an injury, what is it, to your right arm that you received?
Yes, besides that, Officer David DeReal, he assaulted me on October the 4th when I was working for Dorothy Schutte. He hit me on the face, on my eye, and he hurt my left arm, same as he was arresting me for interruption of the investigation. When he insulated my boss told him very clear that Nancy Watson was stealing from her, and he wanted to arrest me because he wanted to cover Nancy Watson. When I'm in court, Judge Catalina Cao is throwing me guilty of having three keys from the safe deposit keys from the bank and trying to access my boss' accounts, which is a lie. Very clear that I have the power to need from my boss because she was afraid of Officer Devereaux and want him to be out of this. But he wanted to pursue the case because he was covering Nancy Watson. I just want everybody to know that I've been begging the sheriff department for over 17 months and I don't hear any response from Mark Tracy. Same as Sergeant Jim Skillicorn. I've been interviewed and I want everybody to know this, what is happening here in Santa Cruz County. You know, I'm not trying to take advantage of this, but I just want every citizen live in Santa Cruz County the best that this country give us the right to stay in the best position to work and live in peace. Thank you.
Mr. Espino, or Fernando as you will.
Yes.
Again, what business did this happen at?
I was working on a 15 Orchards case in Corralitos. I was working for a lady called Dorothy Schutte. As a caregiver, I was taking care of her because she was some part handicapped. And that's when this happened. This lady, Nancy Watson, had planned for over a year to steal the money from this lady. And she acted like she was a conservator from the lady. Some way she got in contact with Judge Catalina Cao because they are the same race. They're Japanese. And that's what I feel I have this problem because they wanted to cover this lady. In fact,
let me interrupt you for a moment. What evidence do you have that that Nancy Watson?
Yes, we have the checks that they were cashed by Nancy Watson, the checks that they were cashed by her son, their checks cashed and made to their own credit cards. There's a transaction for over $97,000 that she removed from the Bank of America, and later on she deposited
account of the woman that you were both. She was also a caregiver to this woman?
No, she wasn't the caregiver. She was a bookkeeper. She just planned to act in front of my boss that she was a bookkeeper because she's not legally a bookkeeper. But she wanted to involve my boss. Like she will work for this lady for $500 a month. But it was only to access her money.
Now, how long were you caretaker to this woman?
I just worked for almost 3 weeks, and I find out that she was giving pills and other medicine to my boss and keep her nosy and sleepy all the time just to access the money.
Now, you say that Catalina Cao, the Superior Court judge, was involved in all this?
Yes, she's involved because I have the reports and the transcriptions. I had audio tapes that I recorded from my boss and Officer Devereaux when
he's a sergeant now, actually.
Yes, he's a sergeant detective from Sheriff Department. Let me tell you this time, I see this officer is still working in this department, and Mark Tracy is covering him because...
Well, before we get to him, let me hear more about a cow, why you feel a cow is involved. I mean, you mentioned they're the same race. That doesn't cut any water with me. There are plenty of people who are of the same race who may be just, you know, some are honest, some are not, you know.
This is a case where my lawyer, Bill Waggle, presented to her the motion to dismiss the warrant that she granted for the search on my sister's house.
Now, yeah, we should get into that in a moment. So anyway, she refused to do that?
Yes, she did, and my lawyer presented the proof that it was an illegal search, and it was the officer Del Real never reported this to the court. That was illegal. And she came in to say that I have the three deposit keys, which it was not true. I never had these three deposit safe keys. Besides, she says that I have the power of attorney, which is legal. It was notarized by a lawyer and a notary. What is wrong with having a power attorney? And my boss gave me the power attorney because she was afraid that Officer Devereaux, my boss was telling Officer Devereaux that Nancy Watson was the one who was stealing.
Now, let me ask you this. The search of your sister's house, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay. On the search, they wanted to access the audio tapes and the records.
Your records?
Yes, my records, right. To destroy them. I know the transcriptions, they will tell you what is in the audio tape. It's the truth. It's telling that Nancy Watson...
They already had the transcriptions before they did the search?
No. The transcriptions were made after the search because that's when they...
Let me ask you this. Let me get the chronology. You were working for 3 weeks taking care of this woman named...
Dorothy Schutte.
And... Schutte?
Schutte, yes.
Schutte.
Yes.
And you were arrested at some point or you were fired at some point? What happened?
No, I was arrested, and Officer Devereaux said that my boss, Dorothy Schutte, didn't want me to work for her because I was asking since the accounts. If you go and talk to the Bank of America...
Before we go into that, because I want to follow this chronology, what was the charge you were arrested on?
I was the charge for the interrupting the investigation, and later on I was charged for account elderly abuse, 368, which says that I'm accessing her accounts.
So were you arrested at... Your place of work? Were you arrested at her house?
Or? Yes, I was arrested at my boss's house.
What did Sergeant Devereaux tell you as he arrested you?
He didn't tell me anything. He just get up and start punching me in the face, on my arm, and then he walked me out of the door and tried to put me on his car.
Now, what time of day did this happen?
It was about 2:30 in the afternoon.
On what date?
It was October the 4th. It was
2002?
Yeah, 2001.
2001. And were there any witnesses to this?
My boss only.
And
the lady for Adult Protection Services. I hate to tell you, but they killed her knowing that she knew everything.
In what sense do you say they killed her?
They insulate my boss and they end killing her. I wasn't there to tell you how they did it, but how can you tell me that she died a few months later with no illness?
How old was she?
She was 85 years old.
Could she have died of natural causes?
No, because I was taking care of her and I knew her conditions. She was a stable lady, only she had is overweight and a little bit of arthritis. Arthritis never killed people so fast.
Now, were you, did you actually have conversations with her after this arrest? Were you able to, was she a supporter of yours, or was she critical of your performance?
No, I tried to go back and talk to her, but Officer David Devereaux talked to another officer, and they didn't let me go into the house. They called me into my house and said that if I go to my boss's home, I will be arrested for trespassing. That's the reason I never showed up into my boss at home.
Your boss, the woman in question?
Yes.
Now, could you have called her on the phone and spoken to her?
I tried to do that, and nobody answered the phone. Nobody wanted to answer the phone.
So you were, what investigation was taking place that you were accused of obstructing?
The investigation says because the case is open in court, and they cannot talk about my case, but this is over 17 months. That I mean, going in court.
No, but I mean, what investigation were you accused of interrupting? What were they investigating?
Okay, the accusation or the charges were 148, which is disturbing the investigation, and 368.
Right,
which
says, what investigation did they say you were disturbing? What were they investigating?
The elderly abuse case.
And how long before Sergeant Devereaux, you say, began to strike you, were you two in the same room? Or were you two together? Or had he arrived, I should say? How long before had he arrived?
Oh, okay, it's like 3 minutes after that.
So he arrived at the house, and what was his purpose?
His purpose was only to talk to my boss, Dorothy Schutte.
About what?
About this case, and I present the power of attorney that
about
she...
About what case?
About the elderly abuse case.
What elderly abuse? You're claiming that you were being
That
Who claimed that you were abusing her?
He told me that he was a part of an investigation. He never told me who told him, but he said that he was a part of the investigation.
Now, what specific acts of abuse were you alleged to have committed?
Well, they said that I was asking her money.
You were taking her money or
yes.
asking her for money?
No, I'm taking her money.
And how much money did they claim you took of hers?
$19,000. There were our sisters in my salary for over 2 months work.
What was your salary?
My salary was $14 an hour over 24 hours care.
And how much did that total up to?
The total for 60 days, 24 hours a day is around $21,000.
So they were accusing you, they're in essence saying that your salary was a form of theft?
Yes.
And what did they claim, you didn't have a right to your salary, or you had made a different understanding, you were going to work free, or what was their claim?
Well, his claim says that I was ripped off her with $19,000 and tried to access her checking accounts and take advantage of her house.
And who made this accusation?
David Deverell. He's a sergeant detective from San.
Who made it to him? He didn't figure it out himself, right?
I don't know on that part.
Okay. So, and are those charges still pending?
Yes, these charges are still pending.
And why haven't they gone to trial? What, 19 months ago?
Yeah, they said that they dropped the charges, but I end with another charges that they brought illegally because this arrest was illegal. And when I tried to talk to Judge Barton, he doesn't want to listen to me when I present the proof that I'm innocent.
Now, I want to hear about that, but again, normally these charges go to trial. Do you have an attorney?
Yes, I have an attorney who want me to turn guilty on these charges.
What's his name?
His name is Bill Wagle.
How do you spell it?
As a Bill, it's B-I-L-L. Wagle is W-E-I-L-L.
Was he court appointed or did you?
Yes, he was a court appointed.
Now, were you held in jail for any length of time?
I was in jail for almost 5 days, and I had to bail out to get out of jail.
How much was your bail?
$25,000.
And what, did you put up a piece of property or?
Yes, we put my sister's property into this. My question is why Nancy Watson, that is proved that she was stealing from my boss, she's at large, and the DA doesn't want to put any charges on her.
Now, is Nancy Watson a longtime employee of the county, or is she privately employed?
She was a private employer by my boss. She worked for her for almost over a year.
And looking at a police report, is this by Sergeant Deborah? Yes, it is. Deputy Deverell with the Santa Cruz Sheriff's Department, and it reads that apparently he asked Nancy Watson about an agreement she had with her services, and she described Nancy as her bookkeeper, Deverell writes, and further explained Nancy worked for about a year, and went on to say, this is apparently your old boss, Mrs. Shutty, how do you pronounce it?
Shutty,
sorry, that Nancy was stealing from her, wasn't able to say why she believed that. Did she ever accuse you of stealing?
No, she never accused us of stealing. She was, every time she was telling Officer Deverell that it was Nancy Watson.
Besides, hasn't been indicted?
Yes.
What has she been indicted for?
Some pills. I cannot tell you right now what's the name of these pills.
But she was indicted for providing bogus medication or badly medicating her?
Yes.
But was she indicted for any kind of theft of money?
Nancy?
Yeah.
No.
So, why did Sergeant Deverell attack you? In other words, in your mind, if you were to describe this, when he came in, did he feel you were challenging his authority? Did he, describe the scene that happened as he came into the house and what happened?
No, he was mad when he found out that I have the power of attorney from my boss. And by now, I know that he's an actor. He's a bad officer who fabricates false reports and evidence to everybody. We have another case, Pinto's case. He fabricated that Pinto had a gun and a knife. When the lawyer from Pinto asked the judge to bring the evidence in front of the people in the court,
Officer Nielsen, who was in the Pinto case? I know Sergeant Devereaux was, Sergeant Devereaux may have been his superior, but yes. I think it was Officer Nielsen who was the officer involved.
Yes, you're right. It was Officer Jason. But I know Officer Devereaux fabricated all these lies, saying that the Pinto son had a gun and a knife, which is a lie, too.
How do you know it was Devereaux who did the fabricating?
The reason is because I heard a lawyer talking, saying that Officer Devereaux was the one who...
that was his opinion, that was the lawyer for the Pinto case?
No, who wrote this report. It was Officer Devereaux, the one who wrote this report.
So Officer Nielsen did the actual shooting, but it was, you think, Devereaux who did the report,
yes.
Subsequent report.
Besides, if we look into this report here, that is on October the 2nd, 2001, Officer Devereaux, please, would you like to read it for me? That
sure.
Will become
on the 10th of... the 2nd of October 2001, I went to 15 Orchard Heights, writes Sergeant Devereaux, and contacted Dorothy Schutte. I also went with Anna and Fernando Espino. During my contact with Mrs. Schutte, both Fernando and Anna were always present. I explained to Mrs. Schutte who I was and that I was investigating claims that she was the victim of theft by her health care providers. Mrs. Schutte expressed concerns that Nancy Watson had stolen from her. She provided me with a checkbook showing recent transactions. While examining the checkbook, Fernando expressed his opinion that all the entries were made at the same time, confirming for him that Nancy Watson was stealing from Mrs. Schutte, yet she's not charged with stealing?
No.
And why is that?
Well, the DA doesn't want to put any charges on her because, as I said, she's protected by Judge Acao and the DA. This is the reason that having proved that she wrote checks, even on this report is saying very clear that Dorothy Schutte, my boss, expressed that it was Nancy Watson the one was stealing from her. And Officer Devereaux want to make a confession, say that she couldn't explain why she was stealing from her.
Discredit her testimony.
Yes.
Let me see what he writes about the actual arrest of you.
Yes.
After meeting, we're reading now the report that has to do with the part of you. Actually, let's go back a little bit. During my contact with Mrs. Schutte, I observed that Fernando Espino exhibited a very significant controlling influence over Mrs. Schutte. Fernando was very forceful to the point of intimidating in his control of the events in Mrs. Schutte's life. After meeting with Mrs. Schutte, I did a records check on Fernando Espino through sheriff's office records. These records reveal that Fernando had his number of arrests for spousal battery and other assaultive behavior. True or false?
No, it's false.
Okay. I also contacted Monterey Sheriff's Office and learned that Fernando was the subject of a shooting investigation. True or false?
It's false.
So they didn't do a shooting investigation on you?
He did a shooting investigation, but I was involved in this shooting, but I was the victim of this gang.
I see.
I wasn't the person who was shooting the man. Mm-hmm. I was almost killed by this gang, and I had to run away from there. I presented back to the sheriff in Monterey County, and I was released the same day because I was the victim of this attempt.
When was this?
This was on October... I'm sorry.
In October?
No. This was on February 2000.
Okay. Now, what about this? Well, it's not really relevant, the spousal battery. It sounds like he's trying to smear you here. On October 3rd at approximately 15:30, Detective Morales and I met with Gail Alderman, APS social worker. As we drove into the driveway, a car was pulling out with two unknown women inside. Detective Morales and I went to the front door of the residence. I found it slightly ajar. I knocked on the door and no one answered. I then called out to Mrs. Schutte in the house and received no answer, believing something may be wrong. Detective Morales and I entered the open front door announcing us. A quick check of the house revealed that no one was there. Is this the incident of the where he hit you, or is this another time?
No, that was one day before.
Okay.
One day before, October the 4th, yes.
So
you see here, it says October the 3rd.
Okay,
right here.
So here we are on October the 4th. On 10-4, I called Mrs. Schutte's residence and spoke with Anna Espino. That's your sister?
Yes.
Anna explained that she and Fernando took Mrs. Schutte to an attorney yesterday afternoon. Anna explained she did not think I was coming to see Mrs. Schutte. I then scheduled a meeting with Mrs. Schutte for 2 p.m. At approximately 1,400 hours, I again met with Gail Alderman. Gail is
a lady from Adult Protection Services.
At Mrs. Schutte's residence. We were met at the door by Fernando, that's you,
yes.
And directed into the living room. Fernando presented us with a durable power of attorney which had been signed on October 3rd. That power of attorney gave Anna and Fernando full access to Mrs. Schutte's bank accounts. I explained to Fernando that I wanted to speak with Mrs. Schutte. Fernando explained that the power of attorney put him in charge and he would decide if we would be allowed to speak with Mrs. Schutte. True or false?
It's false. I never told him that I didn't want to allow him. Or I told him that Dorothy Schutte gave me the power of attorney to stop Nancy from stealing the money and go to the bank and tell the managers from the bank to stop Nancy Watson from stealing money. That's what I told him. And he started punching me on the face and pushing me all the way over into the bed, into the hall, to the bedroom, and he started punching me in the face in front of my boss. My boss wanted to call 911 when the lady from Adult Protection Services, Gail Edelman, pulled the phone away from my boss.
Did Deverell say anything as he was punching you?
No, he didn't say anything. He was just pushing me out of the hall and out of, by the front door of the house.
Was he angry about something you said?
No, he wasn't angry. I was talking to the lady from Adult Protection Services when he got up. He was getting mad because he was telling my boss that with that power of attorney, I will access the money. And my boss says very clearly that she was aware of all the investigation that they were doing in the Monterey County and about my battery case with my wife. She was aware of all this, and that's when the Officer Deverell got mad. His face was looking red, and he is getting up and start punching me in the face.
How many times did he hit you?
He hit me more than 5 times, and then he grabbed me by the arm and started punching me on my stomach and my leg.
Let's see what he writes about this. That power of attorney gave Ann and Fernando full access to Mrs. Schutte's bank accounts. I explained to Fernando and so forth that I wanted to speak with Mrs. Schutte. Fernando explained that the power of attorney put him in charge, and he would decide if we would be allowed to speak with Mrs. Schutte. Fernando then walked back to Mrs. Schutte's bedroom. Gail and I followed along behind Fernando, but he was not aware we had done this. Is this true?
Yes.
Okay. As we entered the bedroom, he objected, asking us to leave. I then spoke with Mrs. Schutte.